Welcome to our Cheltenham Festival, my big wrap-up show. With me, Nat Screen, Daryl Carter, Kevin Blake, la-la-la-la-la-la-la. It feels like forever ago, lads, the Cheltenham Festival. Like, what?
Word, yeah.
Doesn't
like,
it?
I've kind of got my bearings back and I know what day today is. Because Cheltenham can kind of mess you up that way, but we're back, and yeah, this time last week, yeah, jeez,
I know.
Yeah, it's you spend 6-9 months building up to it, and then away she goes.
I mean, it was. I only physically went on the Tuesday because I love the opening day, and oh, it did not disappoint. I don't care about other chats, Cheltenham crowds are down, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I absolutely loved it. It was so fun. Really good.
I don't know what everyone's so miserable about now. Yeah. I thought it was brilliant all 4 days.
Because people are just miserable.
You're unbelievable, Nat. Just people just love moaning.
They love moaning. I mean, Daryl, obviously we're going to find out more throughout the show, but overall, how did the festival treat you?
Yeah, fairly decently, to be honest. I did all right. I did all right over the week. It would have been a lot better, obviously, had Sergino run on the Friday.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of money making, it would have doubled what I brought in that week if Sergino would have won, obviously. But yeah, no, it was not as financially successful as the year before, but it was up there. So I can't complain. I enjoyed it. I had to take 4 days off afterwards because I was just, my brain was just racked. I just needed to sleep. But I thought it was a cracking 4 days. I think it's a brilliant punting festival for punters, right from anti-post right up to the week. Yeah, I love it. I know people moan about it, but I love it. It can have its changes. It, like Kev's outlined some good points on Twitter about some changes that can be made. I'd concur with a lot of those.
Yeah.
But I love the week. I just love it.
Yeah, changes can always be made. You've always got to move forward. You know, things can
100%.
Always be better. That's an obvious point. And of course, there's always going to be scope for improvement. And I'm pleased that you got 4 days sleep because it's Daryl. The one day I went, I was shattered on Wednesday morning. You know, it was just I was absolutely bleh, and then watched the rest of the festival at home, which was a joy to be honest on the TV. It was an absolute joy. Coverage was very good, Mr. Blake.
Oh,
I spied you.
I was just gonna say, yeah, when you're doing the job I was doing there, it does soften it a bit, just because you know yourself, Nat, when you're on the opening show and that, like, you're on track for 6:45 every morning and it makes it a long week. Not that I'm complaining, I'll be getting abuse for complaining, but it does stretch it a bit now. And like Daryl, I was yeah, by the time I got back to bed back in Golden about midnight on Friday evening, I was ready for sleep.
I'm not surprised. I don't know how. I mean, honestly, one day there's enough for me. It's mentally tiring. But like you say, it's a festival to be celebrated. This wrap up show, James, our producer, done a great job of making it a little bit different, this show. And I really can't wait to get stuck into it because our first section is the debrief. I like this. And basically, you can rank from 1 to 5 the 5 best performances of the 2024 Cheltenham Festival. You know, you can talk about why you have them in this order, just how good the performances were. Daryl, it could be about sectionals. Kev, it could be about a horse that they beat, the way that they ran, the way the race unfolded, the finish, anything like that. But you rank from 1 to 5 for the 5 best performances. So, Daryl, do you want to start?
Yeah, okay. I've got a couple of different angles the way I'm going to do this, because if you start saying this was the best performance, the comment section is going to go absolutely nuts.
You're going to get absolutely
let him off there. Let him off. Embrace the comments. Embrace them.
You've had enough abuse this week.
I have a thick skin, don't worry. Yeah.
Number one, Gaelic Warrior for me, because I think that this horse could come back next year. That's the angle with him. Come back next year and really, really throw his hat into a champion chase ring that's been left a little bit wide open, I guess, after El Fabiolo's flop. He didn't look like he wanted to go a yard in the champion chase. But Gaelic Warrior put a lot of people wrong. Like, there was a lot of people doubting this horse. And he put him right to the sword, I thought. I thought he jumped well. I thought he was always in his comfort zone. He looked a class above them, and he cleared away very, very nicely. Look, it was a proper, proper performance. The time, it's hard to get any real handle on times, to be honest, because the ground was just so sort of all over the place, really. So I'm not going to take too many time figures out of the festival. But just to give you a clarity, overall, it was much quicker than the champion chase was run the following day. But again, hard to get a handle on. But I don't know what Kev thinks about Gaelic Warrior, but I thought it was a bit of a coming of age for him.
Mm. Yeah, no, I'd agree. Because I suppose the thing with Gaelic Warrior is he's always looked to have all this talent, but he just had all these little kinks and, you know, bouts of unprofessionalism that he always made you have a little question mark beside him, especially going this way around. But in fairness, he did go a fair way to quietening all of that. Might not have completely silenced it, but geez, there's only a few whispers I'd say left. Yeah. Really good, I thought. Really good. Dominant. Like he'd been properly good in his first two starts over fences, and this was back more like it in those first couple of starts over fences. I know we talked about it on here during the course of the season that like he certainly jumped like one that could come back in trip. As we progress through the weeks, that's always a bit of a journey. This, as we progress through the weeks, I remember we started raising. You get into your Willie Mullins bingo and your psychoanalysis, etc. And I know I started to take the view that maybe they'd be better off going for the 2.5 on the new course. It might be a bit more sympathetic to his tendency to jump right, but they ended up in the old course and it didn't end up really mattering. There wasn't a whole lot of it going out to his right. Now, you would say that the rain that fell definitely would have helped him in a number of different ways. And if he did turn up on a champion chase and good to soft, it would be a little bit different. But that's me with my pokey stick out. He was really, really good. He was really good. I actually had him right up the top end of my list as well. So, I tell you, I was worried about him beforehand. Jeez, I was watching him close and he was revy. He was revy. Oh, he was well up on his toes, worse than Leopardstown now. I was very worried about him watching him in the parade ring. But when he got let go by his handler and Paul started cantering him down to the start, and Paul said to himself afterwards, he just was much happier once he was left alone with the horse. So that's probably always going to be in him. But look, day one at Cheltenham is going to test you like that more so than any place else. And he produced that performance on the end of it. So it, going forward, even if he does get a bit revy, it's probably not something to be getting overexcited about. And yeah, look, can't wait. Assuming he'll go to Punchestown now, right-handed. He'll be fun to watch there. And I don't see anything to beat him at the minute.
It'd be interesting to see what they're doing, because there was talk about King George, wasn't there, last year, but following a gun at the King George. So I wonder what they will do with him. But yeah, he's fascinating. Corbett's Cross was the second on the list. Again, another horse that a lot of people doubted beforehand. Look, you've got to put into context of what he's actually beaten in the National Hunt Chase. It's not a lot. But he's done it with some swagger now. I mean, he was coming, swinging around that home bend, I thought, and he was taking a pull.
Was it like 17 lengths or something to Embassy Gardens? I mean,
yes, 17 lengths, yeah. But he was really swinging into that home bend, and it was just such an easy watch. Like, I had shouted my mouth off a bit about him, and I was a bit nervous. I must have been coming to see if he was going to start jumping like a snooker table or whatever, or he was going to start putting down at fences. And it was just such an easy watch from start to finish. He just absolutely cruised through. Now, again, he's another horse that I think could come back next year and play a serious role, whether it be in a Gold Cup. But I don't know if he's going to be more of a national horse, Grand National type of horse going forward. That could be something to look at. But he was one towards the top of my list. Ballyburn, of course. Like, you couldn't not be impressed with Ballyburn. Again, they mentioned he's going to come back next year. I'm not sure the champion hurdle would be the right way I would go with him personally. I don't know about you, Kev, but I think he's tailor made for fences, isn't he?
Like, they've talked about kind of the champion hurdle Gold Cup double, which is good and punchy, but I could definitely see a champion hurdle with him. Again, like the two you've mentioned there were way up my list as well. Ballyburn, like we talked about it beforehand, like I think we all were unanimous that he was probably the best novice herder of the whole lot. I know myself, I was just a bit worried about him at the trip. I thought Willie was taking the chance going back up in trip, but sure, look, it just didn't matter. Like, yeah, you know, it was helpful that some of the better ones ducked and dove away from him, Slade Steel being the obvious one, but Like he's just, he was really good in terms of raw ability. Now he's probably as talented as there is knocking around, certainly in the novice divisions. And there might only be a handful more talented than him in the open divisions, I dare say. I would love to see him go back in trip. I think it would be, he'd find it even easier back in trip. But look, it was nice to see him at this level over this trip to know that they have options. And yeah, look, we'll see where he ends up. He comes to that point-to-point background. Fences will be there for him. Mm. Like, look, he is six, you know, so if they're going to go chasing, they might not want to hang around. But I'd say... look at it, you end up getting it. It's impossible to avoid in the sport at the minute. You do end up in the Willie Mullen psychoanalysis and trying to put him in amongst the rest because they have Safe Man, they have Lassie Mount, you know, they have plenty of ammo knocking around amongst the 2 mile hurdlers. So that might incentivize them to potentially go chasing with him. But you just, you know, I don't want to get too much into it now. He could do either job, love him, really talented, showed great professionalism here. And very pretty much impossible to throw a stone at him, as much as I love throwing stones, Nat. And to briefly slap her into reverse, Corbett's cross again, like not dissimilar to pretty much everyone we've talked about so far. I was picking and poking and throwing stones, and he just brought all his professionalism to the counter here, did the right thing all the way, showed a consistency in his jumping that had been lacking, and like absolutely mollywhopped Embassy Gardens, I don't know if I want to read it literally just because Embassy Gardens might not have quite got home, but that's not Corbett's Cross's fault. He absolutely danced home, and it was great to see. I think he would have given Factofile loads to think about in the Brown Advisory if they had met there. As we'll touch on later, I'm sure, hopefully this will be the last year where this happens and we see horses that should be knocking heads in the Brown Advisory and being able to duck and dive each other, because he is super talented. Always has looked at, just had that whole... He was doing enough wrong to put doubts in your mind, certainly in my mind, anyway, as a hurdler, again, as a novice chaser. But look, if this is a sign of more professionalism to come, he's gonna be a factor in the open stay and chase division next season. And we'll wait and see what happens now at Punchestown, what the plans are. Because there is a possibility we might belatedly get to see the clash. I have my little doubts, obviously, in the same ownership, but it would be a fun way to end the season. And hey, why not? They're racehorses. They'll have a lovely summer of grass to look forward to. If one of them gets speed, so what? Do it, Lance. Show it to people. Yeah, give them what they want.
I do agree with that, especially this time of year. You got the festival out of the way. But no, Ballyburn was something special. But I tell you, if you didn't know a lot about horses, or you didn't know Ballyburn, you didn't know any of the buzz behind Ballyburn, didn't know it was Willie Mullins' train, when he goes down to post, you think, whoa, keen, like head down, pulling away. You just thought, oh my. And then on the racetrack when the race was off, you just like, wow. I mean, he blew my mind a bit actually, because at the start I thought, what is he doing? Why is he putting his head, like, why is he pulling like that?
You know, the best thing about Ballyburn as well is that all year we've discussed on this program that the novices have just not really been up to scratch. Like, we've been struggling to really find any like a decent depth of novices. But the thing I like about him is he is wiping them aside. Like you can crab him in. Like, I've heard people say, well, he's a standout in a poor year of novices. Well, that might be the case. And when that happens, you want a superstar to be wiping them out of the way. And that is really what he's doing. And that's... Yeah. And that's testament to our good ears, regardless of how bad the novice crop might be. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
And you look at the form at Leopardstown, like Slade Steely kicked him out of the way, Absurd kicked him out of the way.
Mm. Yeah.
Like it reads well, and this performance individually reads well. It's good on the clock. You know, it ticks the boxes. You know, if you're gonna take one up Lion King style and present him to the people, like this is the one, isn't it?
Definitely. And the other thing, just to touch on, is I mentioned before about the reason why I don't think State Man would ever beat Constitution Hill, because Constitution Hill has that long bursting run from the... Well, so does Ballyburn now. So, like, this, if he does go champion, this would be a proper race. This wouldn't be no sit there and try and pounce. This would be hammer and tongs from two out, wouldn't it?
God, I just got a mental image of that. Jeez, that wouldn't that be the first fun champion hurdle for about 10 years?
Absolutely.
Constitution Hill. Yeah. rematching with State, man. Lossie Mouth, which should probably be in the mayor's heard, but maybe not. maybe not. And Ballyburn, you know, who hasn't met him before and has hopefully bolted up a couple of times next season. We're always looking ahead, aren't we? But that'd be a fun thought now, in fairness.
But we still have Ballyburn at number three, Daryl. We're going 1-5. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well. Yeah. Like I say, it's just rating on how I feel. It's not to say he wasn't the best horse I saw last week or not. But Ray Dawlins in at number four.
Yeah.
You would be happy to know. Just simply on the fact that I thought the race was just pedal to the metal from the get go, and I just thought that him and Ginny's Destiny, you know, Ginny's Destiny going alongside him, I just thought they really just showed British racing in the best light it possibly could be seen. That he didn't, Ray Dawlins didn't miss a beat, really. Harry Skelton was always squeezing. Anything in behind just had absolutely no chance because they weren't stopping at all. And I just loved the ability or the attitude he showed to, despite being squeezed the entire time, to just go past Ginny's Destiny. And sort of, I know he was tiring towards the finish, but they went a hell of a clip there. That was a real battle. Like that was probably the best race I feel like I watched all week. Probably because I was on the winning end of it, thankfully. But I think even if I was on Ginny's Destiny, I would have, you know, you'd have held your hands up and said, "Look, there was no more that Ginny Destiny could have done there." Like it was a proper race.
Yeah, I tell you what, watching the race, it was a fantastic race. But I tell you, watching it live, I have to confess, when they started to really race from whatever it was four out, I was thinking to myself, "Oh, lads, you're racing early here," and I saw that the two Irish boys creeping in behind. I'm like, oh god,
because Vassal come down the hill quite well, didn't he? Vassal came down the hill quite well, and I thought, oh,
but it obviously didn't materialize like that. But yeah, I really like Ray Dawlins as well. Wouldn't have made my top five as such, but thought he was really good. And again, like, here's the question for you, Daryl Carter. Here's the question for you, and I'll even put a bit of extra spice on it. If it had been Fact of File versus Corbett's Cross versus Grey Dawning in the Brown Advisory. And I won't give you a full set of prices, but Fact of File would have been Fav for sure. Who would you have been backing?
I would have
Corbett second Fav, Grey Dawning third Fav. I won't give you prices, but you know the shape of it.
Knowing what I know now, I would probably go Corbett's Cross, but not knowing before, I would have probably said Grey Dawning. I would have been against Fact of All.
I'd be with you. I would have been taking on the Fav, whatever way I was going.
100%. It will perhaps just lay the Fav and everything else run for me, because that would have been a hell of a race.
I tell you, we're in the minority, because I put up an old poll. I love an old Twitter poll there a few days ago, asking the question, who would win if the three of them clashed in the Brown Advisory? And like 60% went for Fact of File, which was a landslide I wasn't expecting. I thought he'd win the poll, but Jesus, he absolutely hammered it. So there you go, Darren. We might get a chance to make a few quid out of this this contrarian view of the this particular group of horses that we have.
Definitely. I can't wait to see him clash. That was my top four. I didn't have a fifth. I kind of had a horse who I thought might be worth, like, almost an eye catcher, if you like, and that would have been Jalander Dairies in the bumper, who I think is crying out for an obstacle, and I think we're going to see the best of him when he starts tackling hurdles and fences, and I think he's got a bright future. But those would be my top four performances.
I tell you, I'll stick in. I know the way you're thinking.
Kevin, we haven't got to your 1-5 yet.
Oh no, I've been.
He's adding one to mine.
Yeah, they're in amongst there. I've three of mine are in with Darren there, and I talked about them. So I'll try to count those.
Okay, I just definitely
don't want to repeat myself. I'd add in, I know the way you're thinking. Because look, you know, top five, it wasn't one of the top fives on performance figures or what have you, but how would he have got on in the Brown Advisory if he'd run it? I think he would have been competitive as well. because this was class. The poor old handicapper, whichever one of the handicappers let him at a 1-4-5, and said, I haven't slept a wink since. because horses win handicaps like this, and you know, people cast aspersions about their campaign. Like, but he finished third in the Grade One to Gaelic Warrior Nielete Thomas. Like, he wasn't hiding that much, lads. I couldn't have had him at a short price. I know that the chat about him was huge, but he didn't look particularly well handicapped relative to his hurdle form. And he'd been doing his best over hurdles. He was running in Grade Ones and that, and he just never got beyond the high 130s. So you were banking on him being like a substantially better chaser. And there you go. Those that backed him at the 13-8 for Kim Muir were absolutely right. And he absolutely mollywhopped this. And what I'm a divil for a Derek O'Connor waiting ride. Oh, God, I tell you.
I don't think it was by design, though, was it?
Yeah, he didn't help him maybe in the first half, but yeah. he just Derek, like, you watch him over the years, and there's few sweeter sights, and especially in the Kim Muir and races like this, when Derek is happy coming down the hill, you know, with still plenty of horses in front of him, you know, it's a beautiful sight, picking away, and turning in that this could be a bit of a show, and it was. I see the handicapper has stuck him up to 156, which puts him in striking range of all those good novice chasers. So JP McManus is absolutely swimming in high class league novice chasers. Keeping them apart will be impossible. I think they'll have to clash to some extent, but this was very impressive. Fair play to Gavin Cromwell. He'd a magic week. He didn't have a lot of runners, Gavin. How many runners did he have? Like, he had 5, 8, and he had 2 winners. And a second, Florin Port.
Not bad, is it?
And a third, Pat Doro. You know, fair play to Gavin. Like, that was that was some performance. Now, one of the I heard very little of Gavin Cromwell get mentioned in the debriefs, etc. But he would have been up there for performer of the week. I know Dan Skelton obviously had a mighty week, a brilliant week.
That was fantastic, Ryan Protector. I just thought
you're a devil for a grey, Natalie. A devil for a grey.
I am, aren't I? I keep realizing. I just thought. But Dan, and actually what I thought as well with Grey Dawning is Harry, I was just really impressed with, like, his patience, because, like, he's quite an attack jockey, isn't he? Do you know what I mean? And
you attack there, I thought.
Yeah, but Grey Dawning's like an attack horse. Grey Dawning wants to absolutely go over. And I just thought, I love that race, the Grey Dawning race. I loved the finish. I just loved how it unfolded. I thought it was a proper finish. It was so exciting to watch for me. But
you did well to restrain yourself there in that now, because we know how fond you are of Grey Dawning. And when Darren started talking about him there, I could see. but now you showed discipline.
I thought I won't say anything. I won't also tell them that I did have a bet on Protector out. I just did. I thought that obviously the team were in good form. I thought, do you know what? It's got a real shout. So it was a good race for me. And I thought, yeah, it was a good story for the week, wasn't it, with Dan Skelton, especially for us, Kev, us Brits.
Actually, look at the no. In fairness to Dan, he had an unreal week. Didn't have massive numbers, but target trained like particularly well. So look at he led the charge for the home team, and you have in difficult circumstances now, because, you know, well deserved difficulties he had to come through. Yeah. But it would have been a challenging week inside his brain, I'd say. So to deliver would have been particularly satisfying for him, I'd say. So you take off your imaginary cap for sure.
Yeah.
And just to wind up, Daryl, I'm going to make my number 5 performance of the week. Lark in the morning.
Yeah, there we go. Don't worry, viewers. He tucked us all away with that.
I tell Daryl's convinced that I tucked everyone away. But honestly, if you saw the depression amongst the team on Tuesday morning, you wouldn't believe it. Like, it was considered to take him out. And fair play to Sean Mulryan, the owner, who just said, look, we're here, have a crack. What's the worst that could happen? And geez, he didn't have travel, and he won really well. And, you know, you have to always maintain perspective and context. Like, he won a handicap hurdle off 122. So, you know, he's probably one of the lower rated winners of the week in terms of performance ratings. But he'd excite you now when with the prospect of nicer ground. And it'll just be a case of seeing where he goes next. He could go talking about it the other day. He could go for a Scottish champion hurdle. He could go for a Swinton novices hurdle. Sorry, Swinton handicap hurdle.
What's he gone up to, Kev, from that?
130 in Ireland.
Is that it?
Yeah. You'd be thinking about a Galway hurdle, maybe. Might need to go up a few more pounds, but he'll be a very fun horse, and I'd say. And it should be said as well, like, Joseph's done a particularly good job with him because he hasn't been easy. He in his comeback run on the flat at Cork last year, he got a fracture, and he hasn't been super easy to train at all. So to get him there on the big day, absolutely boomboxing. After a tricky preparation, now look, it's well established. Everyone was reading a bit more into those non-runners than there was to read in. Like, he just didn't want to run them in heavy ground.
Yeah.
So it wasn't. It was a fairly. It was a pretty. What's the word I'm looking for? A head wrecking few weeks with him there. But look, at all's well that ends well, and I think he'll drive on some more and hopefully win another big one.
Yeah, I'm just pleased the week before we talked about the water table and the weather, because it was true. You cannot have a winter with that much rain. It was different conditions. And there were obviously flops in the meeting, which brings us to our section two, our three. We're going to just pick up three flops in the meeting from each of the lads. Why the performance were bad, why they were different factors, why the horse maybe didn't run the way that you thought it was. So, Kev, we start with you first of all for flops in the meeting. That'd be good to get your take. And Darrell, obviously, Ooh. You in that too.
Yeah, number one, Tully Hill. Tully yeah. Hill. Don't know what went wrong there. I was picking at him plenty now with regard to his jumping. I had a real good pick at him. And about two-thirds of the way through the race, I'm like, I'm in trouble here. He's going to make me look like a clown. He's jumping perfectly fine. And all the chat, if you listen to this sort of chat, and I think a lot of the time you're better off not listening, but he had seemingly like worked better than Jesus, where's my brain?
Mystical Power.
Come on.
Mr. No,
Ballybor.
Yes, Ballybor. He'd seemingly worked better than Ballybor the week before, and that was why they ended up where they were. And like that's pretty established fact now. That's not whispers. That's coming from the team, and that was the kind of the explanation before any race was run as to why they'd ended up being put where they were put. And his jumping held up really well. It was perfectly fine. I thought it was better than he's ever jumped. Like, he got the run of it. And he just went out like a light. I don't know why. I didn't hear anything afterwards.
It's
got to
be that three-week turnaround. It's got to be that three-week turnaround.
Well, it could have been, but... God, I don't know. I never heard anything afterwards. Maybe something will emerge in the fullness of time now, but, geez, there was long faces. Long, long faces after that. So, yeah, he'd be right up there with the flops of the week. I know he wasn't one of the shorter-priced ones now, but in terms of everything around it, the chat... The fact that he see everything that he was doing wrong leading into this, he did right here, and yet still disappointed. Yeah, it was a bit bamboozling. I don't think we'll see the very best of him until he goes. Excuse me, I don't think we'll see the very best of him until he goes fencing. But yeah, geez, that was disappointing.
I agree with that. What about another one? I need three.
Let me go.
Yeah, you go.
We'll alternate.
Yeah. I'm gonna take this from a different angle, and I'm gonna and you're gonna have to hear me out on this, and I'm gonna say Nicky Henderson, and it's not because of his horses, the media frenzy around his horses, but it's because I feel like he got swept up in it. At the start of the week, he was saying, you know, well, look, they didn't really haven't run anything with many chances or with much chance in the race yet. Lucia ran really well in the champion hurdle, you know, he was thrilled with that and etc. And then the more I saw Lydia Hislop interview him or whoever interview him, the more they seemed to push the agenda on him that his horses were running badly, and the more he seemed to be concerned about it. And then it got to the Thursday, and it seemed like he decided to throw his toys at the pram and just say, right, we're not running anything, because things weren't going their way. Now, the one thing that was annoying, obviously, is Sagina, and everyone knows I'm talking through my pocket with this, but we crack on. But it's the fact that he came out after the race and said, Sagina's absolutely fine. He's 100%. There's nothing wrong with him. But we're just not going to run because of how the rest of our horses are running. Mm-hmm. Now, I know, obviously, I've got a beer in my bonnet about this sort of thing, but it makes no sense to me, particularly when I went back and looked at his 2023 festival, right? So Henderson in 2023 had John Bond finish second in an Arkle and Constitution Hill win 4-11 in the Champion Hurdle. Now, he also had Epitome beaten 21 lengths, Mr. Coffee beaten 14 lengths, Persian Time Pull Up, Bold Endeavour beaten 10 lengths, Call Me Lord beaten 64 lengths, Balco Coastal beaten 17 lengths, Under Control beaten 22 lengths, and Emery Sacre Pull Up. He also had Lucia beaten at 6-4, and Marie's Rock beaten at 9-4 by 15 lengths. Now, if you compare that to just this year, yeah, Jericho de Recommendé Pull Up at 11-1, Accelero Pull Up at 33-1, Ibirico Lord moved to the Champion Hurdle, Pull Up at 11-1. Marie's Rock, again for the second year running, Pull Up at 12-1. Theatre Glory, 125-1. Jinko Blue, who was well out of his depth anyway, at 20-1, Pull Up. City Chief Pull Up and Russia Ruler at 80-1 Pull Up. But he had Lucia finish third in the Champion Hurdle and seemingly run above herself. Lucky Place beating just three lengths in the Coral Cup. And Bold Endeavour at 51 beating just three lengths in the Coral Cup. My point is I don't understand what more he was expecting. He didn't have a horse priced under 9-1, which basically means he had a 90% chance of losing any race anyway. So I'm not sure taking your short price horses out of the festival told you anything more than would have told you anything. You, in my opinion, you run if John Bond, I can't remember if he said John Bond scoped correctly or not, but if John Bond was fitting well, you run him in a champion chase. That would surely give you a better gauge on how you would. But I felt like Nicky Henderson was a flop this year because I felt like he was throwing his toys out the pram and for no good reason when the horses were 100%. And I thought that was disappointing.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. Like, I think this was under... And look, you don't want to be slagging, but like, I think this was this was probably a case of, you know, negative thought overpowering all else. Because if, like, you could tell... And, you know, we talked about it on Thursday morning in the podcast, and my view was that he wouldn't run Sergino because I just got the impression, and I am not a psychiatrist, but I just got the impression from Nicky and knowing Nicky that he was looking for an excuse not to run. And, like, as well as the performance of the horses early in the week there, like, you watch them, and you could just tell Nico was going out with a very negative mindset.
And he was
pulling them up and giving up very quickly because he probably felt in his mind that there was something there. And I tell you that, you know, without wanting to sound like Mr. Motivator, like, the power of positive thought is a big thing.
100%.
And you know, I just think if there's nothing tangibly, you know, wrong with them, or there's no concerns, which seemed to be the case with Sergino, you got it. Run, don't you?
Yeah.
You gotta run. And I know, look, you'll be deeply annoyed at yourself if you run and it goes wrong. But I think you gotta run. But look,
yeah, but you can run and you can pull up if you don't, if you're a jockey, you can run. You can still go in the race if you think, oh, this is all. But you've got to be in it to win it, though. You've got to. Yeah. You've got to.
I just think there was an element of this.
When you start to get negative. It's very dangerous. It's a very dark place to be, negativity. Very dark.
And the complete opposite was Harry Skelton riding on a high and getting Protectorate over the line. Like, exactly. You know, like that. Those are the two different. So for me, that was just without. I don't want to slag him off because I respect him and he's a great trainer and he knows far more.
His intentions are good and his intentions are focused on the horse. But you could just tell his head was absolutely fried and he was looking for a way out to stop that, to stop the noise in terms of having decisions to make, tough decisions to make. And we just know with Nicky, he'll generally, I'm not slagging, this is just, you know, the evidence backs this up, is that when there is doubts, he will take a pull. And hopefully they're back very soon, you know, and back at Aintree hopefully, and can crack on and do their thing. But it kind of, in a week where there was plenty to be a little bit down about, I think that the whole tag around Nicky's horses, you know, very much added to it.
Yeah, not an easy week at all. And it'd be lots of different opinions on that. But hopefully he'll get them right. But no, it's good to bring it up because I'm a big believer in it. That a negative noise. It's amazing how it can actually impact everything, and especially as you said with jockeys as well, riding wise, you don't want any of that negativity going.
The mind is like the most bizarre thing. Like, anyone that's ever kind of run long distances, like will tell you, like, it's unbelievable what your mind can do with you. If you get, you could do the same, you know, 15K run every day, but for some reason, someday you might just start getting negative and thinking that you're tired. And despite the fact that you're doing the exact same exercises you've done every other day, you get tired. Your mind, it just puts you in the wrong place, and you physically get tired because your mind's telling you something different. You know, it's a mad
thing. I'd
love
to say I can relate. I moved out of this chair for weeks. what's your second one again? I reckon we should only do two of these each.
Yeah, for sure. I'm very orthodox thinking here. Reading Tommy wrong. Don't know what went wrong there, but Jesus, disappointing. You know, Woody didn't have too many flops in the week now, but those were his big two. Don't know what went wrong. The vet had nothing to report. Like on form, should have been bang there, and it just didn't happen. Like stamina was unproven, but geez, I don't think it was stamina. It could have been, but I don't think it was. It seemed to be too bad to be true. And yeah, again, nothing's come out in the wash, but deeply disappointing, I thought.
Yeah, he was my second one as well. I thought he travelled really well. I was very happy, to be honest with you. And then he just asked him, just got lower in the saddle, and there just wasn't anything there. And for me, that has to be too bad to be true. But we'll see how the form works out, and we'll find out. But he was very, very disappointed. The money came for him as well. The money came for
two,
him.
2-1-5.
Yeah.
He did, didn't it? Goodness me. Well, what about, because there'll be positive points, but there'll also be negative points. What about the festival as a whole? So, like, what would you change next year? Anything that you particularly feel strongly about the festival? Well, you know, let's get a balance. Let's see the positive points, but of course there will be negative points as well. But it is interesting to see what changes you think could be made on what you thought of it as a whole.
Yeah, look, I think they could tackle this from all sorts of angles. Like, I think you'd really like to expect that this year would have represented a big wake-up call for the Jockey Club and for the BHA, because there has been an awful lot of negativity. Like, there's people like me to moan every year anyway, because it's kind of a, you know, we have long-term views of the race program and things like that, and we you know, I moan every year. But I think it's become much wider this time round. You could do a whole episode on customer experience. Lots of bad stories there. You know, the car parks were, you know, it was a point of debate. Now, the Jockey Club would defend themselves on the car parks, but it was an unsatisfactory situation. If it had been me, I would have been absolutely hopping mad. You know, but I think the issues like pricing, you know, are really coming to a head now. You know, cost of living crisis, crowds have taken a noticeable dip. You know, they're going to have a real good look at that. But look, at my focus is always on the racing, and I think that there's been issues there for a long, long time. I think they've really come to a head in recent years. Look, I think everyone knows my thoughts about it at this stage, but I think we're going to see changes. Talked to a lot of people in places of influence in the last week and prior to Cheltenham even. And I think there's a real drive for change. Now, look, at in my experience with these things, it's one thing to kind of get over the wall and say, right, we're going to change. Actually achieving as much change as you like can be tricky. If I were to price this up, I think there will be like a number of changes to the race program next year. They'll be smaller in nature. They won't be sweeping, but look, whatever they do is going to help, I think. And it's just a case of how well those that are in the room can battle to get as many changes as possible, because there's a whole heap that they could do to make the racing product better, which will excite committed fans more, which will draw in more casuals, and look, will ultimately deliver a more exciting result, a more exciting product, which is what we should all be pushing for. That's in everyone's interest. So look, that's my wish list, that Jockey Club, BHA, you know, progressive minded people sit down in the room there in the coming weeks, hopefully maybe in the next month or 6 weeks, and start the process and get changes in there for next year to the race program. And then Cheltenham themselves can go away and sit down and reflect on how the week went, and start tackling customer experience, pricing, all the other stuff, because by Jesus, Dattley, this is a class meeting. We all love it, and because we love it so much, is why we pick and poke at it, because we care. You know, the someone said it to me years ago and it stuck with me. They say, always listen to your critics because they care. If they care enough to critique you, it's because they care. And I really hope that everyone involved listens and does the right thing, and we can all push forward in a positive direction, because it has been pretty grinding and wearing to have so much negativity around. And I know a lot of it's coming out of my mouth, but again, yeah, it's coming from a place of love, and hopefully it leads to positive changes.
But what is really confusing though, we know the problems with racing, the race program. We spoke about it, it's really interesting, but there is an element of just being very basic about this, very, very simple, 100%. Like bums on seats or bums 100%. Or standing up, right? Bums on seats, right? Get people onto the race course, stop charging people so much money that it's ridiculous. Even if you're wealthy, it's ridiculous. You can't afford to eat and drink there. That is wrong. You want people in. You want people to love the sport, get addicted to the sport, enjoy the sport. I don't want to go to Doncaster and see an empty grandstand. It looks like a greyhound track. It's awful. It's not what any of us want. But how, in what other scenario can you charge people that much for food and drink? It's a joke.
It's outrageous. When you've got people that are now booking flights to Benidorm for the week to go and watch it on a big screen out there, and drink with their mates, and because that's a cheaper option rather than going to Cheltenham, you're like, there's something wrong. Kev is 100% on the ball with the race program and everything. Yeah. Changes need to be implemented, but the cost has to come down. Like, it's outrageous. You're willing to spend millions of pounds on a shitty advert that goes out on TV to try and attract. Like, who come up with that sort of nonsense? Just reduce. It's very bloody basic. Reduce the price. Find the revenue from elsewhere. Right. Reduce the price. Give people something half decent to eat. Like, don't make them pay 12 quid for a sausage roll. Like, it's outrageous. Basically, I think a lot of racegoers at the moment are just feeling like they're getting ripped off, and that, I tell you, will turn people away from the sport quicker than you know. And yes.
And look, and I think there's levels as well. Like, as you go, look at Cheltenham, like, hospitality is a massive thing, and there will be plenty of people that are happy to pay, you know, a few hundred quid to sit at the table, to sit in their lunch, and that's A1. But for the genuine race goer that loves the sport, that might not have a huge amount of disposable income, you know, you definitely don't want to be alienating them. You know, you want them there. It's the, like, it's one of the great things about going racing in Ireland is, comparatively to England, like, it's really affordable, and the passionate racing fans turn up on those big days, and like, it's the passionate racing fans that make your atmosphere, because they're the ones that care enough to run down to the banks around the winner's enclosure and give one a proper roar when it comes in. And we lacked that a bit now last week, I have to be honest. I don't think, for me, and I was, I hardly left the parade ring all week. That was my station. And it never caught fire for me. It never caught fire like it did, you know, last year. I know there were some kind of exceptional results last year, that you know, extraordinary results, but it never did catch fire. And you need passionate fans. And speaking to a couple of pals now that are, you know, race scores through and through, Irish people that travel over, you know, and they felt really tangibly that there's less Irish people going over, like lads that would have been real mainstays for many years. And you'd always know, not just that they'd be there, you'd know where to find them on the track, and they're just staying home. And that's not good. You know, those, and because that's what made Cheltenham special for so many years, because when the Irish weren't going so well, if you had three or four fancied ones going over, you'd go over them and you go over and support them like you were supporting your football team, because they were flying your flag, and there wasn't many of them. Whereas now we're going over expecting to have 16, you know, 20 winners. And I think we've lost some of that sense of adventure. It's expectation now, which isn't the same thing as hope. And I know that's not Cheltenham's fault, but I think it all feeds back into what we're talking about. It's customer experience, it's pricing, it's race program, quality of the racing product.
Definitely. But there has to be value. You have to, like, what's wrong with pint and a pie? There's no offers. You can't have a pitcher of Guinness. You can't, even now, you can't even buy, if you want champagne, you might hate champagne, you can't even buy a bottle. You have to buy the little ones for, like...
Yeah, only you would know that.
Did you say a pitcher? Did you say a pitcher of Guinness?
Yeah.
Well, she's complaining about the size of the bottle of champagne she can get.
I'm saying that I didn't even drink champagne. I promised, all right. I was in the Guinness Village. I absolutely swear my life. One of my favourite drinks in the world is a Guinness. But why not a Guinness and pie? There's no offers. You don't feel like anywhere you go, you can source any value whatsoever. And it's just, it makes me mad. And Matt Chapman put a post on Twitter a few weeks ago about the Doncaster. But Doncaster twice, but a student night, and it was packed. On seats, people. It is a simple business structure. It just blows my mind. Flabbergasted.
Speaking of value, how did we get on?
We're running out of time, I think, Gary.
Value.
Oh, we'd get ridiculed.
This is the anti-post selection recap, isn't it?
Here we go.
Come on, get on with it. Let's get over.
Come on, lads. Right. Let's bring it back up to here. The best and the unluckiest anti-post selections. Come on, let's bring it back in the room.
I'm going to review Darrow's, then he can review mine.
It'll be a quick segment for me then.
So, Darrow, go to there. Absolutely, not as quick as mine. Darrow got Envoy Alan into the portfolio very early, 14-1. And that was unfortunate. Like, clearly smashed the market. Looked to be the one, and ran great. Look. I mean, I was pretty sure it was a bit of a sickener there. He looked the one, and then his finishing effort didn't quite deliver.
Yeah, but thankfully, if you look a little bit further down that list.
I know. Always read the full book before you tell the story. Because Protector, week 15. Oh, Lordy.
Ray Dawning. Corbett's
Cross. Well, Grey Dawning was for the wrong race. I had a couple where I was playing the game when I like trying to picture where they're going to go to the Brown Advisor or not.
You did say that about Grey Dawning.
Corbett's Cross was a whacker, in fairness. 16-1 Corbett's Cross. That was a whacker now, in fairness.
Yeah, I took a bit of a chance with him. Just felt that JP was moving the chess pieces around, and thankfully I just got in there at the right time, I think. So bit of luck.
And I think you're JP in your side as well, because there was a well-worn racehorse rumor that that JP had backed Antipost, backed the file for the Brown Advisor and Corbett's Cross for the National Hunt Chase. So you landed on the same, your pieces landed on the same spots in the puzzle as JP.
Thankfully,
I'm impressed, Darrell. Corbett's Cross 16-1. I'm impressed. I'm very impressed, I've got to say. And Kevin.
Yeah, no, crossbars now. Monty Starr 12-1 in the Brown Advisory.
I'll tell you what though, I owe you an apology for that because I said no need. I said I was willing to lay him, and he ran an absolute stormer.
He ran very well. He's a lovely horse. Just bumped into a super classy one, in fairness. Yeah, and home by the lead. It was one of those.
The thing is, I should mention, look, he's gone off at, what's he gone off at? 4-1?
4, I think, yeah.
Yeah, 4-1. Like, this is part of anti-post betting for the viewers that are new to the show, but this is what you do. So if you're backing Monty Starr at 12-1, come the day and he's 4-1, you know you've got that covered. You can reassess the race and play it a different way. It's about getting these horses on your side at bigger prices so that when you have a fresh look on the day, you can reassess and make better decisions. So, you know, while he's come second, it's still a cracking shout, mate.
God, he went off 13-2. I thought he went off shorter, but there you go. Anyway, he ran great. He's a lovely horse, in fairness. Home by the lead, 33 in the stairs, ran a belter, finished third. Not annoyed, but I know we felt strongly the race didn't really go for him. They crawled around. He was in tight quarters all the way. That's not really him. Like, I think the blinkers really worked. And like, we were watching him very closely beforehand. We know him very well. We felt he was reacting very well to them in the prelims. So we thought a big run was coming. And they really crawled around. It wasn't really for him. And I'd
About
say he
six
ran
seconds slower than the Potemps, it was.
They crawled. And he ran great. He finished third, probably close to a career best. But look, if anyone that's backed him each way at 33s, you know, that's not a bad result at all, in fairness. As bad results go, we're looking for winners, but that's not the worst story. And brighter days ahead. 11-4. He smashed up the SP.
Imagine that. Golden Ace, I think all of Devon went mad, didn't they, for Jeremy Scott?
Yeah, it was a lovely result. You know, in terms of the story, very frustrating result.
They crawled around in that and all, didn't they? They crawled around in that. Oh, it baffled me why Jack didn't want to go and really just put it to them, really.
Yeah, I think Jack and Paul were looking at each other. Yeah. I think that was it. They were riding against each other and they forgot about the eventual winner. And that's what happened there. Turned into a speed test and she got nipped by one that didn't have a penalty. She had a penalty. We talked about this penalty system that I don't think makes a whole lot of sense. They'll hopefully rectify that for next year, because it doesn't. I think it's a bit. It's kind of all wrong, really, for what the mayor's program is supposed to be. That's not sour grapes. It is what it is. We knew it the way it's were going in, but I just think going forward, they need to change that. And I would be as confident could be that brighter days ahead will history will show was very much the best horse in this race. Yeah. But a combination of the trip and the tepid gallop found her out. But she's really exciting. Can't wait to see her over a fence, back over 2.5 miles, 3 miles. And I think we look back on 11-4 brighter days ahead as one of those bad beat stories.
100%. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, hard not to, wasn't it?
Should we not? We won't give Ryan McHugh a mention, eh?
No, we definitely. McHugh's played a blinder there the last few weeks, so we better give him a mention. He's in week 7. Ryan McHugh was also obviously tapping JP McManus's phone and new to back fact the file for the Brown advisory. Took 5-1, so that was a whacker as well. We might have to bring him back, not just for the impressions. We'll bring him back for some analysis and tipping as well.
Definitely,
and a few impressions.
And we must just mention, because there will be people comment on it. Yes, there have been, you know, horses that didn't make the festival or whatnot. But as a team, we've made a healthy profit over the course of this series. So
yeah, and as a team, we decided not to mention the losers. I only got to mention my best losers. I didn't mention the worst losers.
Exactly. As a team, we are remaining completely positive, and we've already got you a 25-1 anti-post for Cheltenham next year. I'm joking.
Got your 12-1.
Oi.
What?
Well, it baffles me why Irish Point is 12-1 for the Stayers Hurdle and now Tihipu's 3-1. I know I don't really want to go down the Irish Point Tihipu just train again where they're going
to... Straight to Aintree.
Straight to Aintree, but yeah.
I like it.
I suppose the thing you're going to have to contend with there is, I suspect now they've probably set a blueprint for Tiapu, and he'll probably do something similar again. And that's not to say Irish Point won't run. And of course, it had the possibility of something going wrong with Tiapu when he's got you're a super sub. But you just wonder, might they keep them separate? Yeah, possibly. Now, would they run Irish Point in the Champion Hurdle again? Surely not. But In what one assumes will be a far deeper Champion Hurdle, but look at time will tell. It's definitely not a mad price.
I love it. Well, I think it's been such a fun show to be part of. Honestly, I'm sad. I'm a bit sad. It's come to an end. I really am. Hopefully, we'll get reinstated next year.
We'll see what the public says. We'll see what the comments are like. They can only improve from Monday's show.
It's where you're going wrong. Don't read comments. Never read comments. Ever. Oh, right over the head. You've got to. Thick skin. You need a thick skin. There was loads to like about this festival. We've talked about the highs and the lows, but overall, I think it was absolutely fabulous. And hopefully everyone had a really, really good week. And I wonder how Brendan Duke got on. I want to speak to him. Speak to him over the next few weeks.
He did all right. He was doing a tipping column for us during the week. He did all right. Yeah, he did well.
Brilliant. Jukey.
Brilliant. Well, we've had such good guests as well, haven't we, on the show over
Absolutely. God,
when did we start this in November? It's
Jesus, my God.
Episode one next week.
Yes, start the campaign for Roy Lasker, only better.
Yes.
Oi,
oi. Yeah. Oi, oi.
Like flat that.
Is back. The flat is back. Gosh, I'm at Musselburgh on Saturday. Not this 30th Easter Saturday.
Lordy, yeah, is the Musselburgh Gold Cup or something like that? Yeah.
Anyway, so great
times. I'll be at Nice on Sunday for the Madrid handicap. We might see another Paddington. Who knows? Oh, I love it.
Jesus, guys, this is Cheltenham only better.
I know. It just keeps on rolling.
We're transitioning, Darren. We're transitioning.
Just getting our head round. No, it's been great fun. And thank you, lads, for such hard work. You have really put in everything. And we have covered so many horses. It's been absolutely fantastic. So.
No, and thank you very much, Natalie. You've been not just a ray of sunshine, whatever the word for multiple rays of sunshine is throughout the process.
Thank you. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I really have. I really, really have. So have a good week, lads, and keep in touch on our WhatsApp group.
Oh, tell you what.
No, but thanks for everything. And we will, I'm sure, catch up very shortly. And Daryl, best luck. And thanks for all of your input.
Top class, Nat. Thanks.
Super.